Hello, and welcome back to the Chris Yeh Podcast. I am, as always, Chris Yeh. Today's episode, I'm joined by Scott Johnson of Blitzscaling Ventures to discuss blitzscalable venture deals for November 2021. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome back to another edition of Blitzscalable Venture Deals. I am joined, as always, by my partner at Blitzscaling Ventures, Scott Johnson. And today we're going to be talking about blitzscalable venture deals that were announced in November of 2021. Can you believe the year is almost over, Scott?
Yeah, it's month 11, and it's been a really consistent, steady drumbeat of aggressive investing for the last 6 months. We've got 155 deals in our universe this month that were announced. And remember, these are deals announced by top-tier VCs, so about 30 VCs that are really well-known, and these are the deals that they have announced in November. And 155 is a solid number. It's been about 140 to 160 for the last 6 months. So really a good steady pace. We may see some drop off in December with the holidays at the end of the month. But I don't know, Chris, it just seems like the deals keep churning through.
I tell you, it's remarkable because we were in a boom time before the pandemic when we were averaging about 100 deals a month. And since the pandemic, there was an initial dip. Now we're at 150. It's 50% greater. And of course, it's being driven by some macro trends in the marketplace, liquidity, companies like Tiger Global really being super aggressive, making everyone else aggressive. And it's fascinating to watch things play out. Now, the first company we're going to talk about today is not actually one that makes our cut, but we do like to talk about companies that are really close. Now, why is that?
Well, you never know. We're looking at these companies with publicly available data. So we could be wrong, just plain wrong about some of the assumptions we make as we score them. And everyone should remember that we have a 100-point scale. And anything above 80 is something we consider blitzscalable, something we should look into further as a possible investment for our fund. And so when something scores 78 or 79, that means they're really close. And if we're wrong about any aspect of our scoring, then that could tip them into the positive side of that 80 cutoff. And so we just want to make sure that we're talking about deals that are close in addition to the ones that actually make our cutoff.
Wonderful. So the first company we're going to talk about today is Finchual, and Finchual.cl is actually a Chilean company that's expanded to Mexico. It's part of this broader trend we've seen towards emerging market fintechs, which are companies that we generally like because we feel like those emerging markets, especially in Latin America, are underserved and that the customers are essentially up for grabs because this is the first time they're doing these kinds of things. Now, Finchual is a little bit different because there are some established competitors, but those competitors suck. So essentially what Finchual is doing is it is making mutual fund investment easier for people throughout Latin America, and not just mutual fund investment in local economies, but global mutual fund investing. They make it super easy for people to sign up and create an account and invest in mutual funds that are operated by Finchual that operate on the basis of ETFs. So ETFs are super efficient ways, exchange-traded funds, to get access to various markets, and they create these portfolios using classic US-based companies so that people can invest in the big brand names they want to invest in and do so in their home country using their home currency. And in addition, there's no account.
Right? You don't have to have a huge amount of money to get going with Finchual.
Exactly. No account, no investment minimum, no transaction fees. So it is this super low friction way for people to come on board. And that's reflected in the scoring that we did. They actually scored extremely well in many ways. The market size obviously is enormous, gross margin. This is a financial services business, so it's 10 out of 10. The operational scalability, I mean, just moving numbers around, not bad at all, 10 out of 10. The ETF strategy makes it much easier to deal with things. And then the org scalability, we gave it a 9 simply because even though you have a lot of small customers, they're not trading all the time. And that's the key thing to know about this company. It's not like what we've sometimes seen, which is Robinhood for X. Robinhood is an application that encourages people to trade frequently, and it's making its money off of transaction fees and trading. It's basically the spread between bid and ask. And so they want you to trade as often as possible. Finchool, on the other hand, is an asset-based company. So you can basically set it and forget it. You can say, this is the portfolio I want. Just invest money on a regular basis, and you're paying a relatively low fee and no transaction fees for it. So I think it's actually better for society, encouraging long-term ownership and giving people more effective exposure to the markets than, say, the Robinhood clones that we've often seen.
And don't forget, Robinhood, a significant portion of their profit comes from selling data to the high frequency traders. So they're not just encouraging trading for the sake of getting fees.
They're front running, essentially. Yeah. They're enabling people to front run their customers, which is, you could argue bad. Again, the customers are aware of these things, or at least could be aware of them. They make the choice to use Robinhood anyways. It's a better experience for them. I don't begrudge Robinhood its success, but I do think that Finchool is a more stable, more centered, and probably consumer-friendly approach. However,
so we're saying that Robinhood is stealing from the poor and giving to the rich?
Ironically enough, yes, which is hilarious, right? It claims to be stealing from the rich, giving to the poor. It's actually stealing from the poor and giving to the rich. But with Finchool, the reason it doesn't make our cut is because we're looking at this notion of winner take most and viral growth and distribution. And it's just tough for us to get us to those 10 out of 10s, right? They are creating these mutual funds. Other people could create mutual funds. You look over in the United States, it's not like Fidelity is a monopoly player or Vanguard is a monopoly player. And then on the viral growth and distribution side, Robinhood is something that a lot of excitable people use, and they brag about the trades they're making. With Finchool, people invest. They don't say, yes, now I'm going to leave this money in place for 30 years. Check it out on my Instagram. So it got only a 9 on winner take most because of land grab, and an 8 on viral growth or distribution because they've grown nicely. They've got something like three quarters of $1 billion under management, but that's still relatively small, right? You want to get up into the $100 billion range to be one of these great companies like a Fidelity or a Vanguard. So love the company concept. It's still only a 79 for us, but we put it on our list because A, it was interesting to talk about in the context of the trend, and B, when we reach out to the company, which we might very well do in this coming quarter, and we talk to them, we may discover, you know what? We underestimated them. Maybe they have a growth strategy that really works. Maybe it should be an 82 or 83 instead of 79, which would put them in our investment range.
Yeah, like understanding that they may have some brilliant marketing strategy that we just don't know about. And it's viral, or it's highly leveraged. So worth talking to them and figuring that out. Sequoia's led this round. It's a Series B, almost 40 million, 39 million in size. And as Chris said, they're based in Chile, which you don't hear a lot of Chilean based companies raising this kind of money from super high quality investors. So great for Chile. The ecosystem there is getting a boost, certainly, from this round.
Awesome.
As Chris said, the URL is Finchool, FINTUAL.CL. So on to the next one, Chris. What do you want to talk about next?
Yeah, the next one is actually a repeat, so we don't have to go through the scoring again. We just like to note when the companies that we've talked about in the past come back. And here's one that came back, Block Renovation, which is the platform for homeowners, designers, and contractors to work together on home renovation projects. I know, Scott, you just went through this. You wished that Block Renovation were available and that you had used it for your own home renovation. And it has raised more money.
Yeah, they got a Series C done, 50 million, and here's the Vision Fund. We haven't really heard that much from the Vision Fund in the last couple of months, but there are two deals that we'll talk about today that are being led by the Vision Fund. So 50 million, not a huge check for them, but a great sign of progress for Block Renovation. So congratulations to them on that Series C. Now they've raised a total of 104 million. Okay, what's next?
Next up is Imprint, and Imprint does something that I've always thought made a lot of sense. So you may be aware of or use an Amazon card or a Target Red card. Do you use either of those, Scott?
I do not.
Oh my gosh, why not?
Because I like to have my points otherwise achieved, and so I don't want to.
Well, Scott, that's absolutely foolish, because Your points-based cards might give you at most a 2% reward. Amazon gives you a 5% back on every Amazon purchase, and Target Red Card gives you 5% on every Target purchase.
Yeah, that's only those purchases. So
I don't know. I purchased a lot of stuff from Amazon and Target, especially Amazon.
Okay. Well, it makes sense for you. I'm so glad you figured that out. But I have my Chase card that gives me points for every travel thing I do, which is the bulk of my credit card bills usually. So
you don't buy stuff off of Amazon?
I buy some stuff, but you know. Like,
how often do you buy something from Amazon? How often do you get a package delivered?
So I'll give you an example, Chris. I think I've spent, well, I don't want to give the number, but it's many tens of thousands of dollars on my Chase Visa recently because we're having a complete refurbishment of this apartment we just bought. And so like that would have gotten nothing from Amazon. And instead I'm getting tons from the rewards from them. So,
having
more than one, do you really want to have this argument in public?
Absolutely. It's much more entertaining for folks. Now we're getting to the point, which is imagine if those furniture stores had offered you 5% back for signing up instantly for a virtual card.
Exactly.
And that's what Imprint does. It makes it easy for people to do what Amazon and Target do. Though they can do those because they have this massive infrastructure. A small merchant can't, but with Imprint, they can. You hook up your bank account and it acts just like a credit card or debit card, and you get 5% off because they no longer have to pay those credit card fees. And they're getting loyalty because you're not going to do this with every single merchant. You're going to do it when you think it's worthwhile, when you're going to make a huge set of purchases or when you make constant purchases. And so this is an idea I have always loved, and I'm so excited to see someone doing it.
Right. And people have tried to talk me into giving my bank account credentials in the past, and I don't because it makes me squeamish. But if I'm going to save 5%, then okay. Now that 5% can only be spent at that same website. So you want to be sure that you can be able to spend that rebate money in a way that isn't, you know, just unnatural for you. But a lot of times that's going to be true. And so for groceries or anything you buy regularly, as you said, you know, this could be a great solution. You see it sometimes at particular gas stations when they want to give you their particular card, and then you can get a lot of rebate on gas purchases. So it's a good idea. It's a $38 million A round led by Kleiner Perkins and also by Stripe. And one could argue that Stripe knows a little bit about the payment world. So just a wee bit. So it's imprint.co, by the way. And it's coming to a website near you. I imagine with all this money, they're going to be signing up as many websites as they can. Let's go through the scoring, Chris. So, you know, I just talked about signing up websites.
Yes.
How does that affect your thinking about distribution?
So that's the key. You've got the winner take most element coming from what is essentially a land grab, because you're able to go out there and grab these different merchants. And once they have these in place, they're not going to want to leave because essentially their best customers would no longer be able to use the service. So it is a lock-in of all lock-ins. Of course, it's not a complete lock-in. Technically, people could leave, but it's pretty darn good. The viral growth.
You know, it kind of reminds me of BNPL, like all these buy now, pay later. I mean, they raised a ton of money and went as fast as they could signing up all the big players because, you know, once you're in there as the BNPL solution for a website and it's working, they're not going to switch out.
But this is even better than the buy it now, pay later, because all of your best customers, those are the people you want on this service. You want their loyalty locked in. And if you tried to leave the service, all of a sudden their favorite payment mechanism would go away. And boy, that would be a terrible thing to do to your customers.
The other thing is, it's not that tough a sale, right? You go to the website, the e-commerce site, and say, look, we're going to like make your customers more loyal and give them a payment option that makes you more money. So just hook into this API and you're up and running. And by the way, we've already integrated with Shopify, et cetera. I assume they're going to do that. So that's as we talk about distribution next, I think if they are integrated with all the major platforms, so it's super easy to turn on, then that could really accelerate their distribution.
Exactly. And that's why we gave them a 9 on distribution as well, because of the ability to tap into platforms like Shopify. Product market fit, just because it's still relatively early, we gave it an 8, but I think it could improve over time. it's something which I want to try out for myself. Boy, you know, I could use this for some of the places I purchase from a lot, like Domino's, for example. They got a great carryout deal. It's the cheapest way to feed my family. They're kind of sick with it, but that's okay. And then, of course, huge market, and it is a purely financial solution. 10 out of 10 for gross margin, org scalability, ops scalability. Fantastic. We really love it. And it ends up being an 83. Now, we love it so much, but we couldn't give it a 10 out of 10 on winner take most or viral growth. And that kept it from the upper registers of scoring. But nonetheless, 83 is more than enough to make it a blitzscaler.
Oh, 83 is a great score. We rarely see anything in the 90s. I mean, there is one today that does make it to 90, but 83 is a terrific score. So this is a really interesting company. I think they could grow super fast. They could really scale.
Yeah.
BetDex is the next one we're going to talk about, and they get an 87. So an even better score. And I just love this. I think it's a great product. Chris, why don't you tell us what they're doing?
Well, what BetDex does is they offer a decentralized sports betting protocol. And if you start thinking about, hey, you know, what are the times when you really want some sort of immutable ledger and you really want people to not be able to go back on things? It's when you're making bets. And having the ability to have this decentralized sports betting protocol and not worry about things like what, I mean, think about all the times you hear a DraftKings or a FanDuel commercial and they talk about, oh, not available in this state or in this state, call this number. Well, BetDex starts to get around all that. And I just think that it makes a ton of sense. This is a huge industry getting bigger all the time. It's one of the correct reasons, one of the correct uses of this kind of technology.
Well, it's also super cheap. So it takes a lot of the cost of the bet out of the betting process, and consumers are going to love that. And by the way, there's also a claim that there's a lot of counterparty risk when you have a lot of money with a particular betting provider. And so this relieves you of that. So it's highly distributed and highly efficient. And those types of solutions, when they enter a market that's doesn't have those two things, they tend to grow really quickly. So this is a $21 million seed round. So a very large seed round, as seed rounds go. It's being led by FTX and Paradigm. FTX, of course, is the very large crypto wallet, and they are doing a lot of investing. I've seen them showing up in a couple of deals that we looked at this month. So clearly turning up the heat on their investment activity, and it's scored so well. So, I mean, winner take most. Yeah. When you have a protocol that becomes the standard, then that's game over. So if they become that standard where all sports betting is done, then there's a ton of value that accrues and it's never going away.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, that's really part of the main reason they score so high. As far as viral growth and distribution, we gave them a 9. And that's because, you know, once you are able to co-opt some of the major betting players, then you can distribute really quickly. So you can get a lot of the betting universe very quickly with BetDex. And plus, when you're betting, you bet against someone else. And so it's sort of naturally viral that way, that there's a counterparty. And so that counterparty learns about BetDex as you use it. So very, very fast growth, we think.
And if there's any group that talks and talks and talks and really networks with each other, it's degenerate gamblers.
Amen. They are a vocal bunch, and that's
they love life. Talking about gambling.
It's
my God,
their life, it's their sport. Okay, product market fit. You know, it's a seed round. We haven't used it. We imagine that they're working out some kinks. So it's a 7 out of 10. That's our guess. We don't think that people would put $21 million into something that's just a terrible experience. So,
and we can try it out. And if we discover that, you know, it's really good, we can revise it upward. The score could be even higher. It could be one of those rare 90 plus scoring companies. The only danger is, I don't know, Scott, I feel like if you try it out, you might become a gambling addict if it really went well.
Well, what do you think venture capital is in a lot of
us? Too
We're
true.
All gambling
too
addicts. True. Anybody that invests in markets is a gambler. Okay, so there's a lot of all the other metrics are tens, right? So market size, of course, is huge. Gross margin is terrific. They're just they're a piece of software in the middle here. It's like a payment platform in that business model. And then scalability, sure. I mean, you want to make it infinitely scalable, obviously, because transactions are their life, and those need to be perfect every time. And but that's a solved problem. So 10 out of 10, 87, as I said earlier, is their score, and getting up towards 90. That's a really, really good score for BetDex. So congratulations to them on getting off the ground with something really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next yes. We have Rebus, and I need to spell this for you.
Yeah, it's getting hard to spell things these days.
I'm a terrible speller anyway, so I'm going to spell it R-E-I-B-U-S. That was B as in boy. So Rebus. It's a Series B, $75 million led by SoftBank Vision Fund. And that brings their total raise to a little over $100 million. So this is the bulk of the capital they've raised. They got a fresh war chest, and they are coming to market, or they're in market, I should say, with it's a B2B digital marketplace. So why don't you explain to that? For it's for industrial materials. So if you need, a bunch of pipes made in a certain way and bent a certain angle, then that's part of what they do. But really the thing that I think is so cool is they're integrated fully into the design process. So once you design something and then you have a bill of materials, you can essentially take that bill of materials, turn it into an RFP and put it into their platform and get a estimate of what that whole entire system is going to cost to manufacture, at least the parts of it, not the assembly, but the parts. So, is that a time saver. And then as you're designing for manufacturing, you can make adjustments and then rebid and see if it helped with, it might be one particular part that's really expensive because of the way you designed it. And you could change the design, make it cheaper, as long as it's just as good and it's just high quality. You've got an incredible speed to market advantage using the system. So I think it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a classic two-sided marketplace, right? And the only reason it doesn't score the holy pair of 10 out of 10 for winner take most and 10 out of 10 for viral growth of distribution is it lacks that last component of the buyers being sellers and the sellers also being buyers. Because again, it's typically suppliers and people who are producing this versus people who are OEMs and consuming it. And so it doesn't quite get that 10 out of 10. But this is a classic thing. If you remember the discussions we've had in the past about marketplace businesses, what are the things we're looking for? We're looking for a high value per transaction. We're looking for a highly differentiated product. And we're looking for high consideration where people actually care about what they pick. And this one meets all those criteria. It's also competing with a terrible, terrible system right now, which is people basically calling folks up, emailing CAD files around, trying to get bids. It's a terrible, awful system. Rebus really seems to be well suited to meeting the needs. We didn't give them a perfect score on things like product market fit because these are complicated requests, and we have to see that play out. Org scalability as well. Again, you're dealing with customers who expect some handholding. They're not going to be satisfied if you're just like, hey, hands off, man, we don't know. They're like, hey, paying $100,000 for this RFP, I damn well better get some service. So it's not perfect, but that ends up being a score of 88 out of 100. I'm also going to put on my linguistics hat for a second and think about the naming. So Rebus, REI, the root, sort of like reality or reification, sort of talking about this is something that is material, and then bus as in something that transports things like a bus and a computer. So it's sort of like a material bus, if you will.
I didn't see that, Chris. So thanks.
Just thought of it today. Only as we're talking.
Illuminating that for us. And anything else you need to say about that one? No, I think we're done with that one. An awesome score of 88. And finally, we get to our 90 scorer. And anybody who drinks wine knows that when you cross that 90 barrier, it's a psychological barrier for buyers, and they just gobble the stuff up. So what is this awesome thing that scored a 90, Chris?
Well, this is NFTFI. So like SoFi, for social finance, this is NFT finance. And what it is a marketplace for lending where you can use your NFTs as collateral for a loan or for lending to other users.
Isn't that awesome?
It's just love that. Brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
Take something that's worth nothing in fact, but in fact is worth something, uses it as collateral to get more things that are kind of worth nothing, but are actually worth something.
Yes, and that was a confusing thing because the whole field is confusing. But the fact remains, if you have an NFT and you want to be able to leverage in some way other than selling it, obviously some sort of collateralized lending solution is the right way to do it. And NFTI is the first that we've seen that jumps into this area. It scores super duper well because it is winner take most, because it is a marketplace and it is, again, high value, high consideration, fairly differentiated. I think that, you know, obviously it's a finance marketplace. So it is not quite as fully differentiated because basically you're just like, hey, here are the terms, but there's still differentiation there. And you have buyers and sellers, and sellers who are buyers, as is typical. Like, nobody is just purely an NFT owner. If you have an NFT, you probably sell NFTs as well as buying NFTs. So it achieves that holy 10 out of 10 pairing that we look for in the highest scorers. Now, the reason why we don't give it a giant like 99 or 100 score is because there are a couple things. First of all, still very early on. I mean, NFTs are difficult to work with as is. Creating a marketplace on top of NFTs, we think, could present some product challenges. And the market size, listen, you know, this is a new market. It could collapse. And we didn't feel comfortable giving it a 10 out of 10. We're not Bitcoin or crypto maximalists. So we gave it a 9 out of 10. Even if it went down to an 8 out of 10, it would still score in the high 80s. So we feel like this is a good opportunity. And then, of course, you know, great gross margins, great operational scalability, org scalability, you know, a lot of customer service involved because there's lots of money involved. So maybe it's only an 8. Again, remains to be seen. Nonetheless, regardless, it is a high scorer and a company that we have our eye on.
And it's early. It's a seed round. They did a $5 million round. And Kleiner Perkins is in the deal as one of many investors. But, you know, so product market fit, we gave it a 7 because I think they're just getting going. It's a great idea. Obviously, we love the idea, but they got to be the one, right? They got to be the winner that'll take most. And that remains to be seen if they are the winner that takes most in this really interesting opportunity.
And one of the interesting things about it is that the company is based in South Africa, in Cape Town. Right. This is not the typical Silicon Valley deal, even though it feels like a Silicon Valley deal. This is taking place basically as far across the world as you could possibly get. And it will be interesting to see how that enables them. Will it be a barrier at all to growth? But the thing is, if there's anything about this crypto world, the whole point is it should not matter where you are. So it'll be very interesting to see if that plays out.
Right. Web3, maybe you can use your NFT to buy yourself a car with borrowed money, I guess you'd use borrowed fiat currency. I don't think you can do that quite yet, but perhaps that's the world we're headed towards. And it's just a fascinating time. And so, Chris, you know, any musings as we come up towards the end of the year? You know, this is our last podcast of this type for this year because we can't do December deals till December's over, which just de facto means we can't do it till January. So any sort of musings on what's ahead and looking back, just, you know, any words, pearls of wisdom for the audience today?
Well, there are a couple of things. I think, first of all, just looking back on our own journey over the course of the year, it's been a remarkable year. We've been very fortunate to be able to raise money from a lot of incredible people who believed in us. And where we are at the end of this year versus at the beginning of this year is pretty incredible. We felt good at the beginning of this year. I think we feel great exiting the year. So on a personal note, I think that that is fantastic and great for Blitzscaling Ventures. I think that looking at the market, obviously the massive growth in what is now become known as Web3 is the story of the year. And it is something where we began the year thinking about things like Clubhouse and we end the year talking about Web3. There's just been so much change, so much that's been happening as a result of all the things that have occurred this year, again, catalyzed by the pandemic. I think that the other thing that we see is the asset class as a whole continues to be strong. People are pouring money in, funds are getting raised, LPs are getting involved, they're increasing their allocations. So it's a good time to be in this market. Now, will this last forever? The answer, of course, is no. There's still a business cycle. But as we always try to do, by identifying companies that are the winners in winner-take-most markets, as long as those markets are able to survive and make it through the other side, we think they're going to be successful, much in the way that Airbnb has been the bright spot of the travel industry during the pandemic. So just a couple of thoughts as we close out the year, a little triumphant, but you know what? I don't mind that. I think that's a great thing.
It has been a great year, and we appreciate everybody who's listened to us in our evaluations of all these really fascinating companies. I didn't add them all up, but I think it's probably about 70 companies that we covered this year. And so we're looking forward to doing another 70 or more next year.
Fantastic. Well, Scott, as always, it has been a pleasure. To everyone who's listening, please, if you did enjoy this podcast, if you like this content, tell friends about it. We'd love to get a bigger audience. And since this is the last time you'll be hearing from us this year, on behalf of Scott Johnson, I'm Chris Yeh. Happy holidays and Happy New Year.